Hello, freaks, and welcome to Radical Research. This is episode 136 on our long climb to 200. So let's cut right to the chase. We got Hunter Ginn right here, Session Hate Hammers. How you doing?
Hey, what's up?
What's up?
The biscuit.
The biscuit is in the house.
I sent Jason Walton this shirt that I found at Bucky's yesterday, and it's a cat with a cactus behind him, and he's got 2 6 guns on him, and it says, "You've just buttered your last biscuit."
I think you need to buy. I think you're.
I am. I'm
You should
actually.
buy these for all your friends.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna go back down there and buy at least 4 or 5.
I'm an XL. Thank you.
Yep. Cool.
Yeah, and I would, if anybody would ever like talk about that, I'd be like, no, I've never been to Bucky's, but I have this friend. We call him Biscuit. Do you want the rest of the story, or is this good enough?
You've never been,
Anyway.
you know. Fuck anybody that doesn't like Buc-ee's.
Dude, that's amazing.
Buc-ee's, well, but yes.
I don't know anything, dude. Here's the thing: I've traveled in the South a lot. I've seen the signs. I hardly ever see them off the road. Like, where the fuck are they?
Yeah, but like once you go in one, I don't care how cynical you are. I'm a cynical fucker.
Me too.
I don't believe in a lot, but when you walk into Buc-ee's, your heart opens. I'm sorry. It just
Wow. Okay. I mean, that's quite an endorsement.
It does, man. It like it'll make a believer, it'll make a child out of any hardened heart.
So want to thank three people who just joined on to the Patreon subscriber list. We love all of you. We appreciate your Patreon edge. Patreon.com/radical research podcast. If you love us and just want to show us a little bit of love financially, we're not asking much. It's just a small donation per month. You can do $5, $10, $20, or, you know, we'll take the $10,000 a month person, but have yet to find them. I want to thank Sean Costigan. Thank you, Sean. Ross Trotter. Thank you, Ross. And a gentleman who's only going to be known as Rob, R-O-B. Don't think it's Halford, but, you know, you never know. I'd like to think so.
Might be.
Might be. As we record this, my Voivod book is still up there and taking pre-orders. I guess I'm the one taking pre-orders. The Voivod book's just sitting there asking you to buy it. It's called Always Moving, The Strange Multiverse of Voivod. Super proud of this 540-page, 3-pound monster. Thanks, everybody who have ordered already. If you'd like to order, it's radicalresearch.org/Voivod. No, I'm not going to make it available on Amazon anytime soon because they may or may not have had something to do with burning down my house. So before we actually get into Dark Millennium, and that in itself is a somewhat interesting little story, but our last episode, 135, was on a thing called course corrections, which listener and friend, and now we'll just say friend, Paul Stolpe.
Great friend.
Yeah. He submitted that idea to us a while back. We finally jumped on it, had a lot of fun with it. And we asked everybody listening what they thought their course corrections were, or what, you know, and we had a lot of comments on our choices, some agreeing and some disagreeing. And it was fascinating how much response we got. I mean, we always get pretty good response. I think we have a nice, solid audience, and we're very grateful for that. Everybody seems really engaged, and we love hearing from absolutely everyone, even if we really just don't have time to get back to everybody. We'd love to touch, you know, reach out to everyone. Not touch you. I was going to say touch you, but, you know, it
sure. Yeah, no.
seems a little strange.
Yeah, figuratively. Yeah.
Figuratively touch. But anyway, we got a great response. We had like 85 comments on the Facebook post, and we never get that many people pitching in terms of like, here are my thoughts on the episode and the subject. It was just amazing. So really glad for that. I want to go through a few with you, Hunter. I was going to make this a 0.5, but I think we'll just start the episode with this, and then we'll move on to Dark Millennium. Let's start with this email we got from Mike in New Hampshire. I recognize that name. And this is an interesting one, Hunter. My vote for course correction goes to ISIS going from In the Absence of Truth to Wavering Radiant.
Oh,
interesting choice.
Huh. Wavering Radiant is a great album.
Well, I'm not a huge fan. You know, that's the one I know the most and like and appreciate the most. Yep. I have at times even loved it. My last listen didn't go so well, but I don't know in the absence of truth. So, I was just going to
It's
lean on
not.
you for
It's just,
that.
yeah, it's pretty vanilla.
Interesting. Okay. So
Yeah, no, that's a great one. Yep.
nice one, Mike from New Hampshire. Yeah, he also mentioned that how Paul Stolpe had a point about Leviathan. We included a couple of Paul's in the beginning of that episode. And then Mike in New Hampshire reminds us that Jeff Whitehead has mentioned in many interviews that the production on True Traitor, True Whore was a major mistake on that album. He has since gone back and done a remaster on it, came out this year. It sounds much better. Sounds like it was not just a writing thing, but perhaps a production thing. I don't know. So interesting stuff there. Let's move on to the Facebook page. Eric Berg, the lovely Eric Berg. I'm going to just name off four or five that I agree with. How about that? Because there's so many on his list. He offered St. Vitus COD to die healing. Absolute course correction. I'm 100% on that one. What about
COD
you?
is not great. Yeah, no, doubt. Dude, I fucking love Die Healing.
Scott Rieger's. We should do a Scott
Well,
Rieger's show.
and it was it, that record came out at a very important time in my life when Alicia Morgan and Mike Williams were starting to head up things at Maniacs, but also Scott Riggers.
Sure, course correction all the way. Although it's not a perfect album. You were the one that said course corrections don't need to be perfect or even great. They just
No,
need to
no.
be better. Because there's that last song that that Dave sings. It's terrible. Dave Chandler. He takes the last song and it's horrible. The next one I want to mention that Eric Berg talks about is Stephen Wilson's The Future Bites into the Harmony Codex. Now I know you've fallen off of Stephen Wilson
Yeah, I don't know any of this.
and I
Yeah.
still love you, but I will say The Future Bites, I listened to it recently back to back with Harmony Codex because I saw him live recently and it was phenomenal. I told you how amazing that show was. But I listened to these two back to back. It just so happens. And I'm reminded, absolutely, my opinion hasn't changed. Future Bites is really not great. It's got a couple moments I think are awesome, but not a great album. And Harmony Codex is a great album. Absolute fucking some of the top tier Stephen Wilson stuff, Porcupine Tree or otherwise. Like it's just really one of his best works. So Eric Berg, I think he's right on there. Das Seelenbrecken to Arktis for Isan. I like Das Seelenbrecken, but I like Arktis the most out of any of his catalogs. So I guess that works. What about you?
Seelenbrecken, very, it's a weird record.
Sure.
Got like a few good songs, and then just it's got a bunch of like arrhythmic, like weird stuff too. Like it kind of meanders for me.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And Arctis is solid. And
Yeah, of course.
in fact, I think that's a great album. Okay. This is a good one that Eric has. Megadeth So Far So Good into Rest in Peace. It's hard to put anything before Rest in Peace. And So Far So Good happens to be that one. I like So Far So Good more than most
I
people,
do
but I
too.
pro it's not, it's certainly not perfect. And Rest in Peace is about perfect. So here's one of the more
Everybody like talks about Dawn Patrol. Like, I don't fuck off.
in terms of what, not liking it.
It's like fucking 2 minutes.
But what's wrong with it? I think it works so well as an entry into the title track Polaris, right? What I just don't know what's
You.
I, there's
Yes,
nothing. I
thank
mean,
you.
Dawn Patrol's just it's just a it's more cool music on a fucking great album. I don't understand why people don't like it stylistically. Is it just because it's not thrash?
They like everybody talks about Dawn Patrol. That's like Matt Johnson's thing. It's like fucking Dawn Patrol. I was like, it's basically an interlude. And then he said, well, apparently interlude means something else in Southern speak.
Man, rough. Moving on, because yeah, we love Dawn Patrol and all of Rest in Peace. Wishbone Ash, Wishbone 4 to There's the Rub. Totally love that. Because Wishbone 4 is weak. There's the Rub. I've sometimes thought was my favorite Wishbone Ash album. So
If only there were a better album cover.
it's like a talent. What's that? Talisman Humanimal. Great album. Shit album cover. Like terrible album cover.
What did she just even uneven? Like two Dalmatians?
Yeah, all right, I know.
Yeah.
Let's move on. This could take all night. We might just actually do this as an intro for the next few
Right.
episodes. I think we'll do that. How about one more? B-Roll says our buddy down in Georgia, right?
Oh man, my boy
Yeah.
Ilya.
Yeah,
All right.
he was very, very kind to me after the fire, sent me some wonderful music and some other things,
My dude right there.
some healing mementos. Let's pick out a couple of his. This one's interesting. This one's, and this is a band that came up twice last episode on our episode 135, Judas Priest, Redeemer of Souls into Firepower. I'll let you go first if you have any knowledge, and then I'll.
I don't, and Ilya loves Judas Priest a lot more than I do.
Okay. I'm a huge fan. I really don't like Redeemer of Souls at all. It's a Priest album that, at least pre-Fire, I got rid of. And I've never gotten rid of a Priest album that has Halford's vocals on it ever. And then that one, I dragged it around for a few years, and then I was like, I'm never gonna listen to this. And then Firepower, much better album. I think it's overhyped. It's got a couple great songs. Halford's excellent on it, but yeah, I think that's fair because Redeemer is that bad. They absolutely course corrected on Firepower. Plus, it's got a fucking great album cover. Firepower does. Here's one for you, Bolt Thrower, Honor, Valor, Pride into Those Once Loyal.
I'll take it. I'll take it.
Do you like Those Once Loyal as much as most people seem to?
I love it.
I find it boring, and I know I'm on a really sparsely populated island on this opinion, but I don't love Honor, Valor, Pride. I feel like Bolt Thrower kind of wrote their best riffs on the first three albums. I love Fourth Crusade, but it's just absolute lateral move. And hold on, I think the fifth.
For Victory is my second favorite.
No, I was just going to defend for Victory. I think For Victory is up there with the first three. I think that's the big four in Bolt Thrower world for me. I think after that, they're fine. I mean, they're actually kind of great. But if I had heard Mercenary for the first time as my first Bolt Thrower listen, I'd love it. But I feel like they just kind of did the same formula better earlier. Anyway, let's move on. Let's move on. Dark Millennium. Why don't you explain this one? Because it came to us in a much different way than most episodes.
I got into this band because of Tim Hammond, our good friend. Tim seeks out the dark recesses of progressive metal, and this just weird progressive doom metal. I mean, there's just nothing like Dark Millennium.
You know what? It's interesting. I like how you started with Doom because I'm less familiar and they're a name that's been around forever. And I feel like on paper, this is a band I should have gotten way into way back then. They just sort of went over my head. And then Tim brought them to our attention in terms of like, oh, you should check them out. And then you did earlier, way earlier than I did. I just started checking them out for this episode because, and that's what we're getting into here, is that we had like random Radical Research listeners throughout the world go, when's the Dark Millennium episode? And I'm like, I don't know. I guess that'll be a Hunter solo one. I don't know anything about them other than they're German and they were progressive death metal. And I know I laid ears on them back then, but it just never, nothing stuck. And I spent no time just because there's always so much to
Yeah, there's too
listen
much.
to. Yeah. So we're going to get into it. And we're only going to cover the first two albums from 92 and 93. This was their initial phase. This is a band from Germany, not a very big town in Germany either. Not one of the city bands. And first demo was from 1991, The Apocryphal Wisdom. And their first album was 92 on Massacre Records, which would be a reason I might have skipped them or not paid a lot of attention because Massacre was such a hit or miss label. I mean,
It was.
fucking hell. A lot of garbage and a lot of really good stuff. So, or some really good stuff, we'll say. Infamously, Atrocities Blute, which is not great.
We've done it.
We've done it. We've talked about that one. I think we're just going to go song by song. We got four picks from each album, and we're going to probably maybe cover the 2000s stuff when they got back together later. Because you have come back from the trenches, Hunter, and told me that that stuff's good too.
It is.
Is it more in the vein of Ashore or Diana Reid Peace? Because those two albums are significantly different from one another.
Diana Reid Peace.
Oh, really? It's more like that? Are the vocals better on the new stuff than on Diana Reid Peace?
They're a little dicey, but musically it's super great.
Okay, let's get into it. But we're talking about these vocals. This vocalist, I think, is so good on the first album. And then we'll get into that Diana Reid Peace. I want to like him a lot more than I do on the second album, but I think he's so fucking amazing on this first album. This is a song from their first album, Ashore the Celestial Burden, and it's the opener, a little bit from Below the Holy Fatherlands.
Thank you. You know, I've always wanted to like Float Bottom Eyes more than I do.
There's the back of the next Radical Research t-shirt. The slogan. I've always wanted to like phlebotomize more than I actually do. I could say the same thing. So yeah, please carry on.
That's kind of what I want Float Bottom Eyes to sound like.
Sure. You know, it struck me how getting into this album, and thank you, Hunter, and thank you, Tim, and thank you to all the listeners who've now gotten me into this album, because this is a favorite. I'll buy a physical of this eventually, with great vigor. It came out October 1992, obviously recorded early, let's say early to mid 92. Like, that's right along with even My Dying Bride, who to me are a death progressive death doom band for sure. There's some similarity there too. A phlebotomized, yeah, all that just cr really creative and arty death doom that was starting to happen in Europe. You know, it's funny you mentioned Doom earlier, because I've always thought of them more as a death metal band in my limited understanding of this band. But now I'm kind of hearing more of that Doom element. But can we just jump to the vocals, man, for another minute?
Oh yeah, dude. Like they're sort of like a rabid John Tardy sort of thing.
Yeah, I hear Tardy, that ripped, just true voice of death, Martin Van Drunen. But like, and I love Martin Van Drunen. So, and I think, you know, one of the best death metal vocal performances of all time is that second Pestilence album. But like, this guy is almost like a more creative Martin Van Drunen. I feel like he does more. He certainly does more. And I think he does more with that harsh rasp of death. He's great. But that dude, musically, some really beautiful stuff going on. I think these guys probably listen to Fate's Warning, Queensryche, and I as much as they do Gorguts, you know. I mean, this is really cool shit.
Yeah, no, they're an amazing band. Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost completely unknown band.
Yeah, Century Media reissued them 10 years ago now, and all that's out of print. And there aren't many copies on Discogs. I looked today for myself. And that's interesting, because it just kind of came and went. There was demand, but yeah, I th still think that by and large, they're pretty well unknown.
You could say the same thing for like Syndrome or the first two Hex records. Yeah.
First two Hex records. Let's move on to the second song from Ashore of the Celestial Burden. We're gonna hear what you think, Hunter, about Spiritual.
Yeah.
I don't think we can discount the influence of Trouble on so many bands.
I wasn't hearing that there, but now I do, now that you mention it. Good. That's nice.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is more vicious. This is, more brutal.
No, but
But
it's there. Yeah.
yeah, I just feel like Trouble spreads across the spectrum in ways that, they're not given credit for.
Well, okay. That's a link to a band I was thinking of that's kind of quite different than Trouble, but thanks for the Trouble point. You're absolutely dead on. But I was thinking at the end there of Massacre. The drums are very Bill Andrews, and I'm not saying that's a good thing. I feel like Spiritual needs a little more tasty drum in that moment. I like that. I like the riff though. I like the music in that. Of course, I fucking love the vocals. I think the drums are a little weak there, but they remind me of Massacre and Terry Butler, one time big member of Massacre, bassist, is a huge Trouble fan. Dude, it's like the end of a Seinfeld episode up here, man.
I gotta tell you, watching Terry Butler play in Mexico,
With Obituary, right?
yeah, just super cool to be in the presence of Terry Butler. It's like, I mean, Obituary too, obviously, because they're legends, but like, dude was in Death early on,
For sure, absolutely.
I mean, not a great musician, but still cool.
But you're still there in the middle of really important stuff and great stuff. I mean, I think Maskers from Beyond is awesome.
I do too,
Yeah.
completely.
Yeah. I do remember seeing Death on the Scream Bloody Gore tour, 1987, first Milwaukee Metal Fest, and that was probably one of my favorite death metal memories in terms of live performance, because, well, I was seeing a legend in its early peak. You know what I mean? Like, it's,
Yeah, sure.
I love everything about the Scream Bloody Gore era. I can't get enough of that album. I think it's one of the very best. And Terry Butler had just joined, and so had Rick Roz. It was that, well, and Bill Andrews. It was that lineup playing the Scream Bloody Gore stuff. I don't think any leprosy stuff was played. This is July 87. And I remember thinking, man, Terry Butler, like, I was like, I could probably play better than that with like a couple days rehearsal, you know? Like he was pretty clumsy, I think would be the word. The rest of the band was pretty damn tight and good. And I don't mean to bust on him. I think he's great. I've seen him with Obituaries. Super fucking solid.
The Agalloch guys call whenever you just sort of fall into something good, they call it Terry Butlering.
I hope he doesn't hear this. I've always had a fondness for Terry Butler. Oh well.
Mean, it's I do too, but they were just like, it's like a really average person that stumbles into something great.
Oh,
Yeah.
sure. Yeah.
Terry
Well,
Butler did. Yeah.
Terry Butler. All right, let's move on. This is, man, this band is interesting too, because they do have some pretty choice song titles, right? There's a song on this album called Wizard Reassemblage, which is so Blind Guardian.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And what about this one? This is Inside the Sunburnt Thoughts of Frost. Inside the Sunburnt Thoughts of Frost.
Think
You can
about that.
decide. Yeah, think about that. Before we play it, we want to mention that you wanted to play Black Literature. That's kind of a highlight for you of this band, but I could not get a hold of the there's nothing on YouTube even to burn it to MP3 via a tube ripper or something. And that was disappointing. It's because you can find everything on YouTube, but Black Literature is not there. Neither is half this album.
Great.
And
The highlights on the album for me.
Yeah, so that's maybe a the peak of the mountain for me in terms of this band. I think that passage.
Yeah, totally. It is.
I mean, it's just it's sublime musically. Like he's being creative in and out of that. It's those chiming guitars. You know what San Diego band that reminds me of?
Battalion of Saints.
You son of a bitch.
Sorry.
Your reference points are nasty and humiliating, Hunter. Yeah, no, Psychotic Waltz. So, and you knew that, and you've probably heard that before. I don't know. Have you heard that before in this band? In this
Yes.
band before?
Yes. And
Yeah.
that's the incredible thing about this band is like they just do so many different things. I heard disembowelment in that beginning.
Ooh, yeah. See, the more I hear this band, the less death metal I think of them as, and the more doomy it becomes. Although they are certainly a kind of a twist of those things. But yeah, man, great stuff. So, longer album, 54 minutes. There's an instrumental called Dissolution, which I the way it's spelled looks like a portmanteau of what? Disillusion and delusion, dilution. This is the final track, song called The Atmosphere, blazing right through here. This is the longest song in the album at 7.5 minutes. Listen closely because they take an interesting direction on the second album. Here we go, The Atmosphere.
A fascinating piece of music right there.
Yeah.
Those vocals get into Bethlehem territory.
Like, yeah, really tortured.
Yeah, just like very German.
Ah, well, I mean, there you go. Yeah, pretty fascinating how they fit into all this, and did certainly, I think, fly under the radar to some degree.
Oh, absolutely. Man, no
Yeah.
question.
And it's telling that at least that 2015 reissue of 10 years ago in Century Media is completely sold out. There's obviously demand, right? There's obviously people out there, new and old, in terms of like what this band is for them, you know, whether it's a new discovery or an old one, that, you know, there's some real value here. Like, I think this is really good shit. And I would say I'm pretty, when you get past the 80s, I'm pretty picky about German metal. Like I love Accept, I love Scorpions, and I love all the thrash stuff. Well, not all, but you know, I love the great thrash stuff. And you know, Bethlehem. And there, of course, there are these odd bands, but I feel like once you get into the mid-90s and the 2000s, like for me, German metal in general is a tough sell. I don't know why that is.
I
Maybe
hear
that's a
you.
whole, maybe that's a whole other show. So the next album, when you got into this band through Tim, which one did you hear first, and what did you think of Diana Reed Peace?
So I heard that one second, and definitely more challenging.
It's a 1993 album in every way.
And I really, so that was the one I really wanted to love because it came out in 1993. And we're talking about a really weird metal band to begin with. And I was like, ooh, yeah, no, it took some effort.
How about let's.
What an odd album title.
Yeah, I have never. I'm sure there's a description. I'm sure that like I've looked for it a little bit, but I'll bet if there's any kind of liner notes in the reissues that Century did, I'll bet it explains that. But I can't. Yeah, I can't decipher it. I haven't probably sat down with all the lyrics, but yeah, it is very strange. And the album cover's strange. It's all very surreal. And
Fucking 1993.
is inscrutable the right word for it?
Yes. Love it. Yes, that's it. Psychotic Walks, Bleeding, and Cemetery, Godless Beauty Had a Child.
Love it. Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Legit.
You're pretty much, yeah, that's right on target.
And they've still got that, what you identified as that kind of spiraling, cascading guitar style that Psychotic Waltz, that is so obviously central to the Psychotic Waltz identity.
Yeah, And you know, Psychotic Waltz were loved even back then in Germany, probably one of the biggest countries for them at the time, along
And
with Netherlands.
as Norm Macdonald would say, Germans love Psychotic Waltz.
I'll take a Norm Macdonald reference or paraphrase anytime. Hilton Thiessen and Michael Berman are the guitarists. The Psychotic Waltz fans. We're gonna guess. And Christian Mertens, a vocalist, takes a turn here. You don't hear a lot of that anguish, screeching, scratchy death vocal in this album, do you?
No. And that is one of the things that makes that first album so special, because it's so desperate, you know, like it's so convincing.
Yes, and I think there would have been a place for it here on Diana Reed Peace. I wish it was just part of the ingredients.
I agree.
You agree?
Sorry, Marty.
Poor Marty.
Poor Marty.
By the way, Marty talked to me for the Voivod book recently on his awesome Heavy Metallurgy podcast that he does with Alan Knightsblood. I will only ever call him Alan Knightsblood. But those guys do a great job. And just shout out to Marty. And sorry, Marty. Let's move on. Brotherhood Sleep. There's a song on this called Brotherhood Sleep, dot, 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 Back to Treasure Land. Back to Treasure Land sounds very much like a Freedom Call album title. And that's uncomfortable.
God. Oh, right. Yep.
But
Kind of.
it was a it was an extra track on the CD. This came out, you know, obviously LP and CD in 93, but it's, you know, it's part of the album because CD was just as important of a format then as LP, if not more so. This is this is some of Brotherhood Sleep, Back to Treasure Land. So I hear Steve Hackett-isms in the middle there with the guitarists. I hear this band is every bit as German as Seizures Even.
I heard Fear Factory
Ooh,
in there.
yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. But like in a really white German way.
It's a modified Fear Factory for sure. Yeah. It's a European Fear Factory. Yeah, but that's there. And then certainly that was in the stew in 93. I mean, not we were all, but I think a lot of us were interested in Fear Factory's first couple albums very much.
Yeah. No, I don't, and I think I just picked Fear Factory out of that, but like it could have been anything. That was just, yeah, like you said, a part of the stew.
And it's definitely of its time because I think, like some Seizures Even, or gosh, just a million bands you can mention that were trying to do this progressive death slash doom slash thrash thing, whatever it was, in '93 in Europe. You know, I mean, it often cohered, but sometimes it really didn't.
Yeah.
For me, Diana Reid Peace is one of those, at least so far, and I'm new to this band and these albums, so maybe it'll change over time, but like, this is one of those, I would say, almost rare examples where I like the more feral, aggressive album by a band better than the next one that became, you know, quite progressive. And usually it's the progressive one I tend to like, you know, like even more. This one is not that case. It's kind of like Therion. Like, I respect Christopher Johnson to the ends of the earth. You know, I talked to him for my Voivod book. He's a talking head in there. Huge fan. I just respect the guy so much. But like, my favorite Therion's the stuff that was kind of like before Theli or Theli or however Telly, however you say it.
Oh, God, I hate that record.
You know, the more primitive or at least
I mean,
scathing
I play
stuff.
Sympathy Masses is my favorite theory on.
Oh wow. I'm a Beyond Sanctorum guy, but you know, it's I'm never gonna argue with Symphony Masses. I love that. I love that.
Can I tell a story real quick?
If it's about Therion, sure.
It's not about theory on.
No. Yeah, of course you can.
So you said I'm a Beyond Sanctorum guy.
Yeah, I'll be on Sanctorum
So
guy. Yeah.
we were in the customs line getting into Mexico, and
We being you and I.
Agalog. Yeah. So Don and I were next to each other, and there were these two guys from Kansas City, and they were in the queue, like in the line queue, like next to us. So they were way behind us, but like they were next to us. And this one guy goes, "Oh man, I can't wait to get to a lounge." "You a lounge guy?" "Me? I love them." And so anytime I talk to Don now, I go,
Sure.
"Hey, you a lounge guy?"
You a lounge guy?
"Hey, me? Love them."
Oh, hey, me?
It's
Yeah, I
like, "Hey,
love them.
man, you a Beyond Sanctorum guy?"
Shit,
"Me?
Beyond
Love it."
Sanctorum, me? Oh, love
Yeah.
it. Love it. Love it. Oh,
Oh,
yeah.
love it.
Yeah. The way? 12 fucking minutes of fucking pure fucking. Yeah, hey. Anyway,
Oh,
good
we
story.
got
Thank
it.
you for that. I like it. Remind me to tell you about when Heath and I were did that bike ride across Iowa with 17,000 other cyclists, and we were waiting for the showers one day, as you do at the end of every ride, and these three guys spent about 49 solid minutes on graphite.
Graphite.
They were talking about graphite for a very, very long time.
I don't even know what graphite is, honestly.
Well, okay, well. Look it up because it helps you get out of a lock situation. If you got a tight lock on a train door, you can use some graphite and that shit'll fucking loosen up. I kid you not. 49, perhaps 53 minutes on graphite. But
Okay, I was about to say something untoward. I'm not going to. So, all right,
please.
cool. All right.
So we get into fate history.
Another interesting song title.
Millennium, no master is alive.
This is a record I really want to like more than I do.
Okay.
Super interesting record. It's awkward. It's transitional. Yeah, into what? Who knows? Because they essentially stopped after this.
Right.
But it's a band. It is so 1993. It does not stick the landing. A lot of really great ideas, actually. It's just kind of awkward.
I think you really summed it up. I mean, that's what I think of it as well. And it's weird. The first listen I had to it was after Ashore. So I was already familiar with that album and kind of boned up on that. I really liked it, you know. And then the second run through, I was like, boy, these vocals are kind of weak. But I like a lot of the musical ideas. And now, probably, I think I'm my third listen in now fully and partially fourth. And I'm liking a lot of parts a lot. And then some parts I'm like,
That's the problem, is that it's like an album of really good parts. But even beyond the vocals, I think the music has a lot of flaws, in terms of arrangements and things. It's just sort of unwieldy.
That's a really good word for it. I think of it as like a jigsaw puzzle where the pieces just aren't fitting quite together. Really,
Yeah,
really kind of
I think that's a better way to put it.
like a poorly cut jigsaw. It's funny we're saying all this, but like for me, Fate History, the segment we played, I think it succeeds completely there. Those 2 minutes are really good, I think. And I even like the vocals there because there's this kind of decrepit element to the vocal that works for Doom, and we are in just weird prog doom territory here. I mean, I'd never call it confessorish, but those bands could have toured together in 92, 93. But I also, I don't know why I thought of this, but when his voice comes in on that snippet, I think of Attila from Tormentor Mayhem. And I think this album is what I wanted Recipe Ferrum to be. Seriously. Seriously, it is because if Tormentor is going to go weird, like really weird, do it this way. And they didn't. I mean, that album is that 2000 album is really interesting, but I'm kind of
Yeah,
getting off track. But at the same time, it does remind me of of a similar impulse that Tormentor, I think, had to follow up basically Anno Domini, the demo. They're following that up.
that's a really interesting point too. Yeah.
Is it interesting in a way that you bake something for somebody and they say, oh, interesting.
That's interesting.
They're basically telling you it sucks. Is that what you're saying about
It's like, we appreciate the effort that you put in this, but it kind of sucks.
Wagner, get
Yeah.
off the fucking Tormentor train, you idiot.
Well, I gotta say, you cost me like $18 because of that.
With my review of Recipe Ferrum. Recipe Ferrum. Well, I like it. I like it enough to recommend it. But you felt that I led you astray? Interesting. Okay. Well, it's got two reviews at 83% on Metal Archives, whatever that means. What would you rate Diana Reed Peace if you were writing on Metal Archives? 1 out of 100%.
71.
71% or ooh, wow. Okay.
71. Yep.
Interesting. Okay. Well, with that said, let's listen to one that you chose. This is a Peace in My Hands.
Also, a fucking great song title.
EEACE. And I could say something untoward about having a piece in my hands too, but I won't.
Oh, hey, this ain't the first time I've had a piece in my hands.
Sorry, Dark Millennium. We disparage you, but we really do love you.
Keeping the life command.
See, here again, Hunter, I'll say that I think Christian Mertens carries himself pretty well there too. I like that vocal there for the most part. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's
It's
really good.
pretty unhinged.
Yes,
It
exactly.
reminds me a lot of Eisenvater,
Oh, wow.
the third Eisenvater. And those vocals are a little, I mean, they're an acquired taste, but yeah, it kind of reminds me of that.
To me, that acquired taste, and I know exactly where you're going with this. I know that Eisenvater third album. It's crazy how specific that is. No, there's a thing happening in Germany with this vocal, which begins like in Eisenvater's case, in Dark Millennium's case, in Pyogenesis's case, many other cases where you start out with this really throaty, low, you know, just really gruff, convincing, dominating vocal. There's something that happens with each of these bands where they either turn more rock or they turn more experimental or they just get like kind of a little bit further from the root. And the vocals have this like throaty thing.
Well, even you think about Creator on Renewal.
Renewal, a great
Yeah.
example. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes it sounds horrible and sometimes it sounds great. And man, I'm telling you, there's a parallel there in my world between that and like German prog vocals in the 70s. You know what I mean? Like Eloy vocals,
Oh,
whatever
yeah.
it is. Like there's like great music, and then you're like, you got to be a really special person to appreciate an Eloy vocal the way you do a Dark Millennium vocal or a Renewal Creator era vocal. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Very true.
Well, we leave you with that. I mean, there's not much more to say. I do want to check out, I think I'm really going to most definitely make a point to check out their later albums and keep listening to these two on occasion. So this has been fun. And for me, by far, you know, other than that Forrest Pitts episode where he did blind testing on us, you know, this is an episode I went into having to get familiar with the band. It's kind of strange. So that was kind of fun. Next episode, 137. We haven't had fusion decapitations in a while, and while this won't be 10 bands decapitating you, it will be one band called Brand Fucking X.
Beyond Sanctorum guy.